Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at justaskvi. That's vi.com.
Sports Radio FNZ. Post NBA draft reacting to LaMelo Ball, Vernon Carey, Grant Riller, Nick Richards. We got Coach Matt Daugherty in studio. Bonus Daugherty. On a Thursday, what everybody's been clamoring for, we got bonus Matt Daugherty today. Coach, it's always good to have you along.
Yeah, the demand was incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, to get through the parking lot and the lobby to come in here, it was a little overwhelming. I'm glad I had security.
Well, we have had extra security in the building
for
reasons exactly like this.
I appreciate that.
Well, we did it for you.
Yeah, I know.
We did it for you.
Thank you very much.
We are expecting a phone call here momentarily from Mitch Kupchak, Hornets president of basketball operations and general manager. He was busy last night steering the draft. And before we get to Mitch, a quick reminder, 6 days away from our 18th annual WFNZ Street Turkeys presented by Ram Pavement. This year's event is drive-through only on Wednesday, November 25th from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the WFNZ Harris Teeter Doghouse, powered by Coca-Cola, and benefits our friends at Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina and Loaves and Fishes. So drive through, donate a frozen turkey, canned goods, or make a monetary donation. Help us feed our neighbors and our friends in need this holiday season. We're trying to break last year's record of $25,000 raised, 1,700 frozen turkeys, and 10,000 pounds of canned and boxed food. Special thanks to Offutt Kerman and to Piedmont Natural Gas. As we wait, a couple of things we'll get to later in the show. Haven't done a lot of Panthers today for obvious reasons. A lot of draft talk that was required of today's show, and that will be the case, but we'll also talk more about the Panthers as Phil Snow, Panthers defensive coordinator, met with the media just about an hour ago and had some thoughts both about his current defense and who they'll face Sunday in Matt Stafford and the Lions. The Panthers, of course, looking for their first win since all the way back on October the 11th against the Atlanta Falcons on a Sunday afternoon in the Mercedes-Benz Dome in Atlanta. And ever since then, it's been losses to Chicago, New Orleans, Atlanta, Kansas City, and Tampa Bay. Part of an historic stretch of former Super Bowl MVP and league MVP quarterbacks. No big drop-off in Matt Stafford, but a much, much more beatable Detroit Lions team coming to Charlotte on Sunday. And, Coach, I mean, I expect the Panthers to grab a win on Sunday. How about you?
Of course. Of course. No, I just love I love the feel of the team. I love the way they play. You know, every game that they lose, it's usually a play short, you know, with some exceptions. You know, Tampa Bay was a little different animal that got away from pretty quick. But that's going to happen. They almost have to play perfectly to win, and that's hard to do. I think when the talent catches up and they get as healthy as they can become, then they'll be in good shape.
So more on the Panthers here shortly. Jason LaCanfora, NFLInsiderRadio.com, is back in just under an hour. But right now, we head out to the Technicom hotline, and we talk to the general manager, president of basketball operations of your Charlotte Hornets. He was a busy man. I'm not sure how much sleep he got last night. Mitch Kupchak is back with us on the Technicom hotline. Mitch, we appreciate your time, man. How are you?
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon.
Well, it's good to have you. I know you're busy. We appreciate you doing this and talking a bit about last night. I guess I would start here. You know, we knew that the three guys off the board last night, 1, 2, 3, would go in some order in that way. Was LaMelo Ball what you were expecting? I mean, was it just an issue? Or was it a plan where you just stuck to what you thought you needed to do going into it? How did everything come to be last night in the first round?
Well, we considered other players, you know, in the process. You know, over the last whatever we had, right? It's been 7 months really since March. You know, the draft was supposed to be in June. And, you know, here it is, November 18th. So, you know, there was a lot of discussion. And then at the end of the day, Yeah, it ended up being, you know, the three players that were drafted, 1, 2, 3. Quite frankly, we felt that they were probably the best three prospects. You know, there were a couple of other guys, you know, that we did consider that we thought were close. So once we, you know, determined that they were, in our opinion, the top three, you know, we knew we were going to get one of them, obviously, right? We're drafting three. Did we know who we were going to get? No. You know, in this business, you know, all the GMs are very, it's a poker game, you know, and I talked to both of them about moving up, and you try to get information, but yeah, everybody's really smart. You know, they're good poker players, and up until really yesterday afternoon, you know, didn't have a great feel for who Minnesota would take at one, and who Golden State would take at two. We did, you know, get some confirmation late in the afternoon. You know, information comes in, you have sources, and, you know, just things, you know, help you, you know, put together the picture. But then Klay Thompson, right, got hurt, and we don't know the extent of the injury, but, you know, I hope it's not serious. But then all of a sudden you start to say, well, you know, here's something coming out of the blue. Does that change, you know, the draft? And apparently it didn't. So, you know, that's kind of how it played out. And we're very happy, you know, to have selected Melo at number three. You know, there's a lot of reasons why. But we feel, you know, with seasoning and work and putting the time in, you know, he has a chance to be a heck of a player.
So with that in mind, I'm hesitant to use the phrase draft stock. I don't even know what it means half the time anymore. But, you know, I read a lot about how last year at this time, LaMelo's draft stock wasn't nearly as high as it is now. You and I have talked in the past about your trips overseas to scout players internationally, and I'm sure this was a part of it. For you individually, you know, as you scouted and evaluated LaMelo over the course of the last, let's say, 8 to 12 months, was there a pivotal moment? Was there a game? Was there a trip that might have elevated your opinion of LaMelo or convinced you that he's someone you can mold into a special player?
Well, actually, I did go see him play. And I think as most of the listeners know who follow the sport, you know, he played last year in Australia. Mm-hmm. And our feeling was that, you know, if he played really well, you know, or if he got hurt, you know, then he might not finish the season in Australia. So, you know, we decided to go early. We went, you know, in mid, you know, to late November, you know, Charlotte to Australia. And I did see him practice three times, and I saw him play two games. And that was the first, you know, in person, you know, look at him. Now, living in Los Angeles, and my son played basketball, I used to go to AAU games, so I did see him like 10 years ago, or, you know, when he was like 8 or 9 years old, which I don't think was a factor, right? I saw him for about 4 days in Australia, 2 games. You know, we had a quick hello. It's against the rules to talk. You know, met with the coaches there and the GMs there, and, you know, tried to get as much information as possible. So, and then lo and behold, he did hurt his foot, like 3 weeks later, and, ended up leaving Australia and going back to the States. So, you know, the timing was right. We got lucky. We got to see him. And that was, you know, a huge factor because we didn't just have to rely on film.
Mitch, Matt Daugherty, congratulations on a good draft, in my view. A lot of people talk about things that players can't do, and one of the glaring topics is LaMelo's jump shot. Obviously, his elbows fly. What will you do to address that? Have you talked to him about it? Is there a coach assigned to try to work on that, or do you let him come in with that form and, you know, adjust accordingly?
Yeah, Matt, that's always been, you know, a question mark. Actually, with his older brother also, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who was drafted by the Lakers and was traded to New Orleans. And, you know, he went through an overhaul of his shot, I think, a year ago. And he actually shot the ball pretty well in New Orleans this year. Yes, that was a concern. Last week in Los Angeles, they did have a workout where we went to, and they also invited Golden State, and I think Detroit was there too. And it was just a 1-0 workout. But for me, because I did see him in November, the one thing I wanted to see him do in L.A. last week was shoot the ball. You know, I needed to be convinced, you know, that he could, at minimum, make open shots. Now, I don't know if, you know, he's going to be able to put the ball down and then pull up, you know, go get a shot is the expression, right, in basketball. Mm-hmm. Put it down and go get a shot. But if you cannot make open shots, you know, then that really handicaps your ability, you know, as a ball handling guard or as a player in our league. You know, now opponents don't have to guard you. You know, they could take two or three steps off you, and then now that's a problem. So he can make open shots. He shot the ball for an hour, and the ball, you know, it's not the prettiest thing. His left hand. So his left elbow, like you said, goes out a little bit. But when the ball leaves his hand, it leaves his hand, you know, as it should. And he has great rotation, and he shoots the ball the same way every time. So I don't think that we would look to correct, you know, his shot. I think he's going to be able to make open shots. Whether he can put it down and pull up, you know, I don't know if he can do that. And I don't know if that's necessary for him to be successful.
Mitch Kupchak, Hornets GM, with us on the Technicom hotline. Mitch, got a couple minutes left here, so I'll try to move quickly. I love the Vernon Carey pick at 32. I was intrigued by him last week as we were having a discussion about his weight loss. Jay Billis talked about how productive he is in multiple areas last night. Why was Vernon Carey so attractive to you with the 32nd overall pick?
Well, Jay Billis would talk about, you know, how attractive he was, right? Of course he's
going to
do that.
Of course.
I love it.
Yeah. And... you know, that did make it a tougher pick for me. And, you know, Buzz and Michael being in the room, you know, Michael looked at me, you know, not lovingly, you know, when we made the pick. So, okay, putting all that, you know, I do, my job is to get the best basketball team possible, right? So I try to look past that stuff. Yes, he did lose over 30 pounds. You know, and I thought he played heavy last year. I did see him play several times. I saw him practice, and he's got great hands. You know, he can make shots. You know, he can shoot threes. He has a great feel for the game. He's not, you know, learning, you know, the instincts of the game. He's got really good instincts. And the fact that he lost 30 pounds, he's a different player. So in the second round, you know, close to the first round, right, number 32, a young, developing big, you know, who we feel, you know, we're lucky to have on our roster.
There we go. We're going to talk to Mitch Kupchak with us on the Technicom hotline. Sorry, a bit of a technical glitch right there. Coach has one more for you.
Nick, Mitch, real quick, Nick Richards, someone that I felt as a sleeper in this draft. Your comments.
Another big... incredibly, ridiculously athletic, you know, runs the floor like a deer and can really get off the ground. He started playing the game late. He's from Jamaica, not Jamaica, New York, but Jamaica, the island, right? And he did not play basketball growing up. So he started playing 14 or 15. So I would put him into the late bloomer category. Great kid. You know, we did see him work out 2 weeks ago also. You know, and he could actually shoot the ball a little bit. I mean, shooting it in an open gym and then shooting it, you know, in a game in the NBA is a little bit different, but his form is good enough. And it may take a year or two, you know, for him, you know, to figure out where he actually is. But he's a big kid and really athletic, and I think he's going to work hard.
Two things, Mitch. Grant Riller, the 56th overall pick. I looked down this morning at his career stats and realized that I called a game of his once upon a time his freshman year, and he scored 21 points off the bench in that game, and you know, he's a guy that can fill it up, and I realize he's probably a bit of a project being the 56th overall pick, but what attracted you to Grant Riller?
I think you described it pretty good. You know, he is a four-year guy, so you know his game is more advanced, you know, than maybe a 19-year-old player or a 20-year-old player. You know, we had him ranked higher on our board, for whatever that's worth, right? And you know, the fact that he was available at 56, we're happy, okay, to get a guy like that. Now we have to play with our roster. You know, we're hopeful that there's a G League season this year, and we'll go to camp, and then in camp we'll evaluate, you know, all these guys, and then maybe a couple of them go to the G League, and they can develop down there for a year. So I don't know if they'll all be on our roster this year, but they're talents, and worst case scenario, we get to look at them for a year, but he's an accomplished player, and we had him much higher on our draft board.
Love it. Hey, so with the final thing here, I know there have been a lot of rumors floating around. I know that you're a guy who, you know, you keep things pretty close to your vest, so I don't expect you to tell me what you have coming up here soon. But with free agency, and as Coach and I were talking about earlier, you got a bunch of guys in that backcourt. I mean, some might even call it a logjam. You got some money to spend, some cap space. I mean, how much better can you make this roster over the course of the next few weeks? Should we expect any more movement or a roster adjustment?
We don't know. Okay. It's, you know, a period where, you know, it's very competitive with the teams. You know, fortunately we're one of four or five teams that do have cap room. So we have the ability to go out and, you know, pay a player more than anybody else, but, you know, we don't want to make a mistake and pay the wrong player, you know, or overpay a player. So, you know, yes, we've targeted some players and, you know, even today we're, you know, trying to get some stuff done. You know, we can't sign players. You know, we can talk to teams about trades. And then the free agent period starts, you know, in about a day or so. And then we're allowed to actually talk to free agents. But, you know, right now we could look to sign our rookies that we drafted last night and look to make trades. So the free agent period is coming. We're working on it. We're preparing. And I can't tell you what's going to happen because I don't know.
Understood. I like Matt, I like what you did last night. I love the players you brought into the organization, and it's been exciting to watch the last year and a half of what appears to be a great start to a rebuilding of that roster. Mitch, you're always gracious with your time and your insights, sir. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. See you guys. See you, Matt.
Thanks, Mitch.
There you go. Mitch Kupchak, GM, President, Basketball Operations of your Charlotte Hornets. That guy is much funnier than some people give him credit for.
He is a Long Island wise guy, and it was coming out there with the Duke stuff. I loved it, and he's just a good person, high character, and I think we're fortunate to have him in Charlotte with the Hornets.
Yep. Well, we'll react to some of that when we come back, including one thing that he said that caught my attention. That I think could give you some clue as to what they may do next. You're in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.
Sports Radio FNZ.
The ACC plays here.
There's nobody home. Touchdown.
We are Charlotte.
Sports Radio FNZ.
Sports Radio FNZ, Kyle Bailey with you alongside special guest. You know him. He's here every Thursday. He's just hanging around a bit longer on this Thursday as we react to the NBA draft and the Hornets Hall of Picks last night. That is Coach Matt Daugherty. Listen to Sports Radio FNZ as we get you ready for the Panthers and Lions on Sunday. Join Mac and Brett Jensen for countdown to kickoff coverage starting at 11 a.m. on Sunday morning, and then stick around for the complete post-game coverage with Mac and Nick Wilson right after the Panthers game, right here on Sports Radio FNZ. And speaking of the Panthers, we will get some good football talk in coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, 38 minutes from now. Jason Lockenfora, Radio.com Sports NFL Insider, is back. We'll get the latest from him, his thoughts on Carolina and Detroit here in Charlotte on Sunday, and, of course, the wider world of the National Football League. As you heard Michael Felder earlier say, every team in the league right now is under COVID protocol. So they're just trying to get through the rest of the season. The Panthers have their own agenda. We'll get to all that with Jason Lockenfora coming up here shortly. But I want to go back with Coach Matt Daugherty here and react to a couple of things that Mitch Kupchak just told us in the previous segment. If you missed it, Hornets GM, President of Basketball Operations, Mitch Kupchak, joined us before the break. You can always listen to it later on the radio.com app with the rewind feature or on WFNZ.com. Coach, from what Mitch just told us, what stood out to you? What jumped off the or jumped out of your headphones there?
Well, I think a couple things. His voice, he was very excited about Nick Richards. I think that jumped out. I was kind of surprised, but just his tone, you know, his work ethic. He talked about, you know, Nick's work ethic, how big he was, how he could really run like a deer. You know, that was pretty neat. And then, you know, talking about going back to watch a kid shoot during the pandemic, to watch LaMelo Ball shoot during the pandemic, he just wanted to see the ball roll off his hands. And, you know, a lot can go, like, there was a great player, Jamal Wilkes, who played at UCLA and then with the Golden State Warriors. And he wound up the ball. I mean, ball went snaked around his body. But when he released it, the release point was perfect and the ball rotated properly. So Bob McAdoo, you know, Reggie Miller, you know, do they do the same thing all the time? Golf, you know, golfers, you know, it all comes down to where's the club head at impact. And I think, you know, Mitch just needed to see the ball roll off his hands in an up close environment. Sometimes that's hard to do in a game because it depends on where you're sitting, you know, the angle of it. But when you're in a gym by yourself and you can really focus in on a kid's shot, that obviously was a big question mark for Mitch that needed to be checked off before he could pull the trigger as a top three pick.
And that makes sense. I guess our buddy Rick Bunnell of the Charlotte Observer was listening in to our conversation with Mitch, and he highlighted something that also stood out to me. Rick tweeted out that Mitch had joined us and said that Nick Richards was quote-unquote ridiculously athletic for his size, and that is the pick, by the way, for those that don't know. The Pelicans made that selection at 42. The Hornets traded a future second-round draft pick, I believe 2024 is the second rounder they traded to get Nick Richardson. And if you don't know, Kentucky fans rave about this kid. Mm-hmm. John Calipari was, singing this kid's praises from the rooftops last night. Calipari said, quote, "Of all the kids that we've coached who have elevated and benefited from the culture we've built here, I would say Nick is at the top of that list." Said Nick's ability to self-evaluate and block out the clutter for the last three seasons has shown incredible maturity. End quote. He goes on to talk about looking inward and knowing that he needed more time in Kentucky before taking off for the draft. He was an all-SEC first teamer this past season, and he went from essentially averaging 4.5 points, 4 rebounds a game in about 13 minutes off the bench the first two seasons to all-SEC, 14 points per game, had a conference high in double doubles. Pulling him down 8 rebounds a game. He took a huge step forward. And I think the thing that Mitch highlighted about not starting to play basketball until 15 years of age gives you some hope. There's a lot more to be molded there.
Right. And Mitch is funny when he said, you know, the kids from Jamaica and not, you know, not New York. You know, he did start the game late. And in a way, then you have this nice piece of clay that you can mold, and you don't have bad habits that you have to break and then reset. I sensed his excitement. And then, you know, funny being a little apprehensive about drafting a guy from Duke, with Michael in the room. That is a real thing, by the way, guys, that you think like that doesn't matter. Like that is a real thing to Carolina guys and to Duke guys, and his shot at Jay Billis. I mean, it's just Mitch. It's just subtle shots. And it was really neat to have a conversation with him and get inside his head a little bit at the process.
It's days like today, by the way, that I always like hearing from listeners, but days like today, especially where we are reacting to big news and, you know, to things that could change the trajectory and the course of the organizations here in this city. So the phone lines are wide open, and we'll go to the ASA Abloy phone lines right now. Jonathan wants to share some thoughts on the Hornets draft. Jonathan, how are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the draft. I wanted to give a big shout out to Mitch Kupchak and Michael Jordan and the whole Charlotte Hornets organization, man, I just kind of call it breaking the mold last night. I mean, in the previous years, man, I felt like we just drafted off a need or maybe like a project. I don't feel like we were drafted the best player available. I mean, we got LaMelo at three. I was like crossing my fingers, hoping we didn't go with Obi Toppin or somebody else and not taking the best player available. When you got Vernon Carey in the early second round, I mean, I feel like that's a great pick. Like they said, he lost 30 pounds. I mean, if you look at the kid, I mean, he was like the top three high school prospect coming out of high school just last year. I mean, I feel like it's a great pick. And in most of the mock drafts with the Grant kid, I mean, I feel like I seen him in the 30s in all the mock drafts I've seen. So, I mean, I just felt like they had a good, solid draft.
I'm with you. I appreciate the phone call. And look, admittedly, I've come in the last couple of years after the draft being pretty optimistic. I was maybe a bit more optimistic about Malik Monk right away than was justified. I think he's finally giving us some justification, or at least he was before his season ended abruptly. But you look back, it was okay to be optimistic about P.J. Washington. It was okay to be optimistic about Devontae Graham. So I think there's precedent here to be very optimistic this morning. But I want to go back, Coach, to what he said about Vernon Carey losing 30 pounds. What does that specifically mean to you?
It means that the kid cares. I talk a lot about, I said it earlier, care factor. Do you care? Do you have pride? Are you willing to work? Losing weight is a hard thing, especially for young people. I mean, I think it's a hard thing for them to do in the discipline, because you have to change some real behaviors, eating habits and then work out more. And so the fact that he may have recognized that, or the people around him, and then he did it, is incredible. And that's where players have made the biggest jumps, because that and their jump shots. I said that earlier. Draymond Green was fat, lost weight. Nazi Muhammad, Nazi's local. I played golf with Nazi about a month ago, and I joke with Nazi. I saw him in high school. He's like 300 pounds. He said, I was only 275. I said, whatever. And when he got to Kentucky, Rick Pitino said, you're not going to play unless you get like below 245. And that was in August. And he got below 245, and he turned out to be a 17, 18-year-old pro. Paul Millsap was heavy in college and then lost weight and then improved the jump shot, and he's been an all-star every other season in the NBA. So the losing weight shows me that he cares, because there are a lot of players that have been told, if you lose weight, you'll be in the NBA. And they don't lose the weight.
Well, that's a good point. And by the way, this is not a guy who was looking sloppy last year. He's a big, bruising dude at 6'10". I mean, yeah. He carried the weight well.
Yes, he did.
But because the game has changed, and because 15 years ago he probably would have been a top five pick, but because the game has changed, the ability to get out and run in transition is obviously, extremely important. But the ability defensively to be light enough to switch, to defend the pick and roll, that's 100%. Something he had to do.
100%. And the game's not a grind it out post game anymore. So yes, you're better off being leaner and quicker than bigger and bulkier.
Texter's writing in. I want to address this before we step aside, and we probably can continue to, and we'll have to, I think. One texter is irate about the LaMelo ball pick. He says, have you seen his bleep? His shot is totally broken. LaMelo's shot is definitely broken. All I look at is people's game. Who cares about off the court? He sucks on the court. He very much does not suck on the court. There are reasons to be skeptical that he is going to be a superstar, but there are also reasons to think, with his athleticism, his court vision, his passing, that he could be a really good player in the NBA. And I would also go to this. Once upon a time, Coach, I seem to recall us all saying that Kemba Walker couldn't shoot. That was a thing that we said pretty consistently back in the day, wasn't it?
Kemba's shot was not great, and he worked at it. And I think Mark Price deserved a lot of credit for his growth and development, and then Bruce Kreitzer to help him become a better shooter. So, there are players that don't improve their shooting. Michael Gilchrist. There are players that don't get better as shooters, and there are some that are. It's not a given. You can't just say, he'll become better. I think you have to have a mindset, a growth mindset as a person, to be willing to improve. And then you have to understand and visualize and conceptualize and trust. It takes a lot, but when it happens, it can be magical. And when it doesn't, it can be very frustrating. But the players, it's like, hey, you either improve and you make a lot of money for a long time, or you don't.
That's how it works. And I told you earlier to start the show, and I'll say it again. I told somebody on Twitter a couple of minutes ago. There's a great piece that came out a couple of days ago. It's one article, one guy's view, but it tells a really good story. Joe Vardon, senior NBA writer at The Athletic, profiled LaMelo Ball's single season at Spire Academy in Ohio. That year in between, I believe, Lithuania and Australia. And the stories he tells from the people in Ohio that were around LaMelo Ball, that were around the Ball family, he paints a picture of kind of a circus with the Facebook reality show and the waivers and everything like that. But he paints a pretty clear picture, I think, of a kid in LaMelo who's been a victim of narrative in a way. He paints a picture of a really likable, humble kid who's known actually as a good teammate that people like to be around. And that's interesting. Check that out. It's on my Twitter feed, at Kyle Bailey Club. Give it a read if you can. I think that might change your perception a little bit of LaMelo, the person. Not that I don't think he puts too much emphasis on what random folks think about him, but I think it might paint a little bit of a different picture for you as it pertains to LaMelo Ball. We got one more segment to go here with Coach Matt Daugherty. Coming up in 28 minutes, Jason Lockenfora is back. But when we come back, there's something that happened earlier this week that may change the way business is done in college sports. And we'll talk about it next here in the Clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.
Sports Radio FNZ
presents Jack Daniel's Football Fridays.
We get you ready for all your weekend college and NFL football
every week
on Sports Radio FNZ.
Back on Sports Radio FNZ, Kyle Bailey with you one final time alongside Coach Matt Daugherty. Coming up in 20 minutes, Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Jason Lockenfora is back, and we'll talk about the Panthers-Lions on Sunday. We do have a quick update from Joe Person of The Athletic covering the Panthers, tweeting out just minutes ago that Teddy Bridgewater will be limited again today in practice. That could be as precautionary as anything else. He was in a red limited jersey yesterday as well. Still sounds like they're hopeful he'll play Sunday against the Lions. And, of course, if he can't, that changes pretty much everything about that game. So we'll talk about it with Jason. We'll keep an eye on the latest. But I want to get to a couple of things here before we wrap up this fine conversation with Coach Matt Daugherty on this Thursday morning. First of all, we were just having some casual discussions during the break about what the Hornets opening night starting lineup could look like, you know, and the guys that we know for a fact, Coach, will be in the Hornets starting lineup on opening night. And well, PJ Washington figures to be probably the most solid guess. I would expect to see Devontae Graham out there.
Yes.
And you jumped in immediately and said LaMelo.
You got to start him. Yeah. I mean, the number three pick, there's a need there. You've got to put the ball in his hands. It's just like a quarterback. You used to wait for the quarterback to develop, and then you started to throw him in there like Daniel Jones with the Giants. You know, hey, you're going to get your butt kicked, but there's no better way to learn than through the experiences of the game. And why wait? You know, this is not like a championship caliber team. Where you can wait to plug and play. This is a team that is several years from maybe where we want to be, and so let's put him in now because it's not going to do him or us any good by having him come off the bench.
No, and I don't think we'll see them go so small as to play, you know, LaMelo, Devontae, and Terry together in the starting lineup.
I think Terry's the odd man out, and I hope I don't see him on the streets. But
he is scary.
You know, but I just think he's the odd man out.
Yeah.
Because Devontae is too good and too good of a shooter and scorer, and LaMelo needs the ball in his hands because otherwise he's not that effective. You know, and I think you can go with Monk coming off the bench because he can score and can shoot better than Terry Rozier.
That's a pretty offensively capable second unit, second backcourt coming off if you have Terry and Malik Monk coming off your bench.
Yeah.
You know, and again, going back to the starting lineup, unless there's a deal made, and that's what makes this tough because I still think one of these guys, maybe one or two or even three of these guys could be traded away. You know, maybe something along the lines of Zeller and Washington and Bridges and LaMelo and Devontae. You know, as your starting five with Rozier and Monk coming off the bench in the backcourt and, you know, some combination after that of Cody Martin or, I think Nick Batum's going to get some run this year. I think we may find out that the elbow was bugging him a bit more than we realized last season. I don't think he's going to be a focus of anything they're doing, but you're paying him that much money. If he's healthy enough to play, he's going to get some time out there.
I would hope.
You'd hope so.
What's he getting, 20?
$27 million. Shocker, he opted in for the final year of his deal. Just stunned that he did that.
No, he was so committed to
the
program.
Completely stunned that he did that, right? Completely stunned.
Listen, it's not his fault. That's the thing that I have to remind myself. It's not his fault. Someone offered the money.
Yep.
And he took it.
None of us are turning that down.
No.
Not a single person here or listening out there would, you know, just graciously, charitably turn down $27 million.
No.
So, I mean, don't get mad at him.
Become his friend.
He didn't offer himself the deal. That's true. Yeah, be his buddy. It's probably some perks to that. So there's something that happened earlier this week, and I teed off on it for a couple of minutes when it did. You and I had discussed already. This is not a hyper-local story, but it speaks to, I think, you know, what's happening in college basketball to an extent, but also how the business model, because of COVID, because of the pandemic and everything else, could change the way some of the business side of athletics gets done. Greg Marshall stepped down at Wichita State after an investigation that began in August to a lot of incidents, allegations of violence against his own players, against staffers, and even some other student athletes in the Wichita State Athletics Department. He resigned after that investigation concluded, and he also walked out the door with $7.75 million at a time where Wichita State and other programs around the country are laying people off, furloughing people, and it doesn't sit well with a lot of folks. And, and if you know, you know, the inner workings of college basketball even a little bit, I don't say this often or lightly about people because Greg Marshall and I don't know each other super well. I'm comfortable enough to say Greg Marshall has a reputation in college basketball of not being a very nice guy.
Right.
And so when things go south, he's not going to have many people circling the wagons for him.
Right.
It does bother me, though, that that university, in the face of so much financial struggle right now, loss of scholarships and everything else, sent him packing with $8 million if they thought that what he did was so egregious that he had to go.
Well, you know, we don't know the contract. I mean, that's the bottom line is, if they could, they would. So they obviously did what they thought was in their best interest, because maybe, you know, Greg was probably owed more, but threatened that, you know, hey, if you don't pay me X, I'm going to sue you. And in the court of law, who is going to win that? You know, so everything's a negotiation at that point. And there's been a lot of coaches getting paid a lot of money not to coach. And for a guy who got let go and didn't get paid a lot of money not to coach, it burns me some. But give their agent a lot of credit for the good contract.
I just assume it's always Jimmy Sexton at this point. I you're right about the contractual, you know, legal side of that sort of thing. There is a great piece, though, that was written by Dan Wetzel over at Yahoo Sports about this earlier this week. And he said that the Greg Marshall saga just shows how broken the system is. He referenced Mark Gottlieb Mark Godfrey at NC State. NC State, I think it was a year or two ago,
right,
just stopped paying his buyout.
Right.
They stopped, and they dared him to come get it. And to this point, he hasn't.
Right.
You know, and so there's some precedent here where NC State said, hey, wait a minute, we paid you to go away, but, you know, after we found out everything else and some things have come to light, they stopped payments on his buyout and dared him to come get it, and he hasn't made a move to do that.
Well, let me ask you a question. If an institution, an academic institution of higher learning, balks on a contract, what are they telling people? They're not going to honor contracts?
I think you're right. That has to be considered. But at the same time, the clauses in these contracts about personal conduct and, you know, the way you represent the program at the university.
That's all negotiated when, you know, up front. And then he has been recruited away by Alabama and Texas A&M and all these schools. So the contracts, I'm sure, get renegotiated, and he's got the leverage. So that's when they put pen to paper and draw up the contract and they sign it. So now they have to uphold that contract. So it's all, you know, the fear of losing out, the fear of him walking away. They sold their soul.
Is there also some element to, and I think there's some truth to this, the extent to which I don't know that I could ever really know, but there are people in that athletics department who are complicit in covering for him.
100%.
The people that, you know, would rather, you know, pony up that buyout, make him sign an NDA and go away so it's never discussed again, than have that public fight because, you know, some of what was almost assuredly done by, you know, administrators and others to protect him and to cover up what he did. They don't want their names thrown through this.
No, they probably looked away. I mean, there probably were reports and maybe they didn't follow up on the reports like you see at LSU now with, you know, people that
Those allegations are bad.
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, they don't want to open up that, you know, nothing to see here. $7 million, make it go away. Okay, go away. You say nice things, I say nice things. Boom, it's done.
It ties into even the college football conversation. Will Muschamp, $13.2 million to go away. We all like to think, I think we all like to fancy ourselves capitalists who agree that you're worth what the market says you're worth. You're worth what somebody's willing to pay you. A contract's a contract. It's not that I don't believe in those things. It's that there's something to me, and maybe this is a little bit too romanticized for some people, and I don't know if it is or not, but it was like with Art Briles at Baylor. When all that went down,
right.
You know, people say, well, people deserve a second chance. You're saying he should never be allowed to coach again. No, I think if Art Briles wants to go coach in the NFL or coach in the CFL or, you know, something like that, then I'm not going to tell him where he can't work or who should hire him. But when you work with young people at the college level, you know, this is a benevolent dictator type of dynamic where you're in charge. They answer right to you. They look up to you. They look to you for all their answers. You know, when you burn that bridge and when you make those kind of mistakes with young people at the college level, I don't know that you necessarily always deserve a second chance at that level. Does that make sense?
100%. I agree. 100%.
So how do you, I mean, what's the future then? Because South Carolina, even though they're willing to pony up the money to make Will Muschamp go away, and in their calculations, it would maybe cost more to keep him than it would, you know, to pay the buyout. Do we see that change in college football where these universities can no longer afford to pay these coaches that much money to not coach their football team?
I think that the market will change because of the pandemic and they realize how fragile it is and the resources and reserves are not there. And I think that there'll be boosters who say, you know, listen, I'm tired of paying for people not, you know, eventually, like an AD can only go through two rounds of coaches. Like after a while, it's got to be Ray Turner, you know, the AD at South Carolina.
Ray Tanner, right.
Ray Tanner.
Yeah.
Who I like and is a good guy and has done a hell of a job, was a great baseball coach. But, you know, after a couple of hires, it's like, okay, you know, yeah, not only is the coach got to go, but the AD might have to go. So they have to make calculated, educated decisions. And quite often it becomes so emotional and they got to have a guy and the court of public. Listen, nobody wanted Dabo Sweeney.
No.
Right. And look at him. That's my point, is that's where you've got to have an AD that has some courage. Yeah. What you said.
Cojones. Yeah, we'll go
know,
with that.
Like the AD who Tom Butters at Duke, when he hired Mike Krzyzewski from Army, and then Mike Krzyzewski has a terrible season in his third year, loses to Wagner at home, gets called in by Butters, thinks he's going to get fired. Butters gives him a 10-year extension. The rest is history.
Yeah. Look, and I got texters saying, blame the contracts that the universities agreed to. No, we agree with you. I put it on the school.
Right.
I put it on the AD. I put it on the presidents who sign off on these things. I'm not blaming the coach here. I'm saying, is this going to bring about meaningful reform in college athletics?
I think it will, but it just takes one who feels the pressure. I got to have that coach. Can't lose him. Can't lose him. And they give him everything.
Mm. It's not good business. It's not good business.
Listen, college athletics is a bad business model. I've said that for 20 years.
College athletics
shouldn't be on college campuses.
You've been pounding that drum since I've known you, and I tend to agree. Coach, great stuff, man.
Thank you.
We got to hang out a bit
good
longer today. Coach Matt Daugherty, ACC Network analyst, longtime Tar Heel, national champ, former head coach. Always a pleasure, and he's with us every Thursday, typically during the lunch hour, but a good extended stretch with him today as we have spent a lot of time reacting to the Hornets draft last night. We'll come back. Let's talk a little football. Jason Lockenfora, Radio.com Sports NFL Insider. Does he like the Panthers Sunday to break the 5-game losing streak and get back on the winning side of the column? You'll find out next here in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.